Caroline Murphy is back with It Says in the Papers.
Surprise AIB rate cut to put pressure on rivals. That's the headline in the Irish Times today, as the paper leads with a piece on what it says was AIB's first reduction in variable and fixed mortgage rates in 3 years. We're told the move will benefit 146,000 mortgage holders, that it partly reverses the bank's decision in April 2013 to increase rates despite a series of ECB cuts, and also that although other banks have declined to say if they'll be following suit, analysts believe the move is likely to trigger a response. That's the aspect of it which is highlighted in the Irish Independent page one piece. More banks will be forced to slash rates after AIB cut is the headline there. But for its lead story, the Independent and indeed the Irish Examiner and the Irish Daily Mail all still go with Irish water. The Independent leads with the bottom line for all of us. Water pressure rises, now €100 off every bill. The story says the government's planning to extend the water charges tax relief to ensure everyone is guaranteed €100 off their bill. And it adds a cap on water charges is also under consideration, but householders with a meter would still be able to pay the metered rate if it was lower. The Examiner story, meanwhile, focuses on what happened yesterday. Rising tide of protests is its headline over a report on both the meeting between Irish Water officials and public representatives, which had to be abandoned in Cork, and also on arrests at meter installation protests. The Irish Daily Mail, meanwhile, looks at the way they say Irish Water is describing its chairperson. Neil Michael says Fianna Fáil TD Barry Cowan wants to know why Rose Hines' time as a director at Bank of Ireland is missing from her Irish Water online CV. Roy Keane's CV, meanwhile, is not going to include a stint on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, at least according to the Irish Sun. Keane Know of the Jungle is the headline there. The paper says the former Irish soccer star turned down a €500,000 offer to appear on the show. We're told ITV identified him as its all-time dream guest for it, but his response was, I met the jungle people, but I thought, nah, not for me. The Irish Daily Star, however, suggests it might be for him in the future. The story there says Keane refused to rule out appearing on the show. That Ebola hoax at Dublin Airport yesterday makes news this morning. It's the lead in the Irish Daily Mirror. Plane madness is the headline on the piece about the detentions of three people after a cup with Be Careful Ebola was handed to a flight attendant on an Aer Lingus flight from Milan. From the National Museum, meanwhile, news that it may have to close some of its sites or else charge for entry. The Times finds front page space for a report on the funding crisis there, while also on the front of the Times, a piece on the High Court judgment yesterday, which found that a separated father should not have been considered as a single person when being assessed. Separated father's children should be factor in rent allowance is the headline there. On the front of the Examiner, meanwhile, a story about the penalty points abuses probe. The internal Garda investigation is due to be completed in 2 weeks, says Cormac O'Keefe. And also in the Examiner, there's an analysis piece inside on treatments for prostate cancer. Ray Sheeran writes about undergoing surgery in Germany. In the Independent, meanwhile, there's a report on the planning appeals hearing that's taking place about Walford. Most expensive house in Ireland lies derelict, is the headline there. But finally this morning, as a big piece in The Independent highlights the launch of a video competition to focus our young people on heart health, the Mail reports the implications of a study for theirs. We're told figures from a DCU study shows that only 12% of our teenagers are getting the exercise that their hearts and health require. So, is there anything we could or should do about it? Well, actually, the editorial writer in the Mail believes there absolutely is. School, says the writer, is one of the few places where teenagers can be told what to do. And so there is no reason why the government could not immediately commit every school child in the country to a certain minimum period of physical education every day. After all, how much money, asks the writer, does it cost to require a teenager to do sit-ups or run around a schoolyard for a certain length of time? All that's really required, says the piece, is political will.
Caroline Murphy, 13 minutes past eight.
The four people who Belfast woman Maria Cahill says carried out an IRA investigation into her claim of rape by a senior Republican in 1997 say they won't take up an offer to meet with the Taoiseach. Peter Madden of Madden and Finucane Solicitors, who represents Pádraig Wilson, Seamus Finucane, Breege Wright and Maura McCrory, yesterday published a letter he wrote to the Taoiseach last week saying he'd advised his clients against any meeting. Peter Madden is on the phone now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Gavin.
Why won't your clients meet the Taoiseach?
Well, it seems to me, having looked at the transcript of the Dáil meeting on the 22nd of October last Wednesday, that the Taoiseach has already made his mind up about this. And he has already stated very clearly that he states as a fact that my clients were members of the IRA. And he doesn't even state that as an allegation. What he said is, I'm reading from the transcript, he said that the central issue here, a young woman who was raped and sexually abused, being required by powerful people within the IRA to attend at a meeting and having to face her abuser. So he's taken that as a fact, when in fact it's not a fact at the moment. It's a disputed fact, and it's an allegation. So it seems to me that the Taoiseach attempting to meet people, in which allegations, unproved allegations actually, to meet with them, is some sort of political stunt, I would say, because the fact is that these people, my clients, or four of my clients, have been acquitted by a court on these self-same allegations.
Maria Cahill has been consistent in her claims for many months now. Many people indeed, would argue that her consistency over a long period of time gives her great credibility. What would you say?
Well, I would say that her credibility could only be tested properly in a court of law. And that was arranged. A trial was due to take place in which she would make the allegations in court and she would be challenged in those allegations. Now, my clients have waited 4 years to challenge the allegations that she has made, and she's made them in great detail. And in fact, two of my clients, Maura McCrory and Breege Wright, have worked tirelessly for years in the Falls Women's Centre, helping abused women and children. And she has made these allegations about both all four, including Breege Wright and Maura McCrory. They are untested, and it seems to me that the Taoiseach cannot conduct any sort of inquiry into this affair at all. It's a matter for the courts. The courts in the north here is the same system in the north, or practically the same system in the north as it is in the south. I practice in both jurisdictions in criminal law, and it's very, very similar.
There was a 4-year wait, as you said, before the case went to court after concerns about the prosecution's case. Maria Cahill withdrew her support for the prosecution, and there were clearly concerns about the prosecution because it's now being reviewed by a leading human rights barrister.
Yes, but the concerns about the prosecution, I've got concerns about the prosecution, I haven't got concerns about the prosecutor, I've got concerns about some parts of the prosecution. But let me just ask you a question. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but were you aware that Maria Cahill wrote a letter to the IRA Army Council?
It's not a question I can answer, I'm afraid, Peter Mann.
Well, I don't think you would be aware of it, because you wouldn't have heard about it in the Spotlight, BBC Spotlight, and you wouldn't have heard about it, you wouldn't have seen it in the Sunday papers. But it is a fact. And that what she did was, she wrote a letter, and this is part of the prosecution case, by the way. This isn't the prosecution papers, this is not a secret document. What she said in this letter, she was complaining because she had written to the IRA previously and they hadn't responded. Now, she has written a letter to the IRA Army Council, believe it or not. And what she says is, she complains about the fact that the IRA, didn't actually carry out a proper investigation.
Can I ask
you? Just let me finish.
Yes.
She says, I also want to make it clear that I believe the Army's intentions were honourable with regards to the two women who deal with me. Now, she's referring there to Breege Wright and Maura McCrory. She accuses them of being in the IRA. My two clients have denied being members of the IRA. They were arrested. They were questioned. They denied membership of the IRA. They were waiting for a trial. And then, lo and behold, on the eve of the trial in relation to Martin Morris, Miss Cahill decides that she's not going to give evidence.
That's a letter we haven't seen, so you understand I can't comment on it in that sense, and that's a letter we haven't seen and we can't verify in that sense. But can I ask
you... She also went on to say that she had an option to go to the RUC and decided not to.
Can I ask you what interaction, if any, did your clients have with Maria Cahill?
Well, you see, that's the whole point of this. That process is within a trial process. And I think, you know, the public are very much aware that when people are accused of any sort of serious crime, that serious crime is prosecuted and they're brought to trial, the public are very much aware that people will reserve their defence and they will conduct their defence and they will challenge the accusations by the accuser if they want to do that.
Were your clients in a room with Maria Cahill over a period of many months questioning her about her rape allegations?
The question in relation to that, Gavin. Maria Cahill refused to come to court in a public way and make her allegations. She wrote to the IRA Army Council.
Will you release that letter publicly, Peter Madden?
Implies that she cooperated in the investigation.
Will you release that letter publicly, Peter?
Well, the letter's in the prosecution documents. It's at page 600 or something like that in the trial papers. And I'm surprised that the BBC Spotlight didn't refer to it. And I'm surprised that none of the Sunday papers referred to it. It's maybe page 600 something or other. Probably didn't actually reach that extent of the trial papers. But it's a very important document.
Peter Madden, you
see, she also has made a note to the IRA investigation team, setting out what her allegations are. In other words, it would seem from these papers that she was cooperating with an IRA investigation. Now, bearing in mind, my clients deny membership of the IRA and have denied that all along and haven't had the opportunity to challenge these accusations.
You also say that your clients have been subjected to trial by media, that their innocence has been impugned. Will they take legal action against those who say they're guilty?
Yes, they will, in fact. And as far as this BBC Spotlight programme is concerned, they will be taking action against Spotlight, because if this is not a cover-up, I don't know what is. Why this information wasn't disclosed to the public, I just don't know. But it requires an investigation of its own.
Peter Madden of Madden and Finucane Solicitors, thank you very much for speaking to us from Belfast this morning.
I think it's going to be absolutely enormous, unprecedented popular mobilisation against these hated water charges. There's going to be protests in every single corner of the country, over 25 demonstrations in Dublin. It's going to far exceed the numbers that we saw on the streets of Dublin 2 weeks ago. And I just hope the government is listening to the voice of the people, which is going to be clearly expressed this weekend, that they want water charges abolished.
And we have had peaceful protests, obviously, so far, but we've seen a lot of trouble around the installation of water meters. Do you have any concerns at all with so many protests taking place over the weekend that there may be trouble and that may affect your campaign?
No, I think there will be no trouble whatsoever. We're absolutely committed to peaceful protests. We've encouraged people that these are family-friendly protests where you can bring your children, bring the prams, bring your granny. These are going to be communities organically organising across the country against a tax that they cannot pay and believe is totally unfair.
And why do you think there's so much anger among the public about this particular issue?
I think people have had enough of 6 years of austerity, of income cuts, of stealth charges, and from huge numbers of people they simply cannot take anymore. And they're saying the government should lay off, abolish these charges and find a fair way to fund our public services and our water system.
But that's not going to happen. We had Pat Rabbit speaking on Morning Ireland earlier, saying that, you know, water charges are in place all across Europe. We need to have the money in order to improve the infrastructure. Your campaign, do you think really that it's likely to succeed on any level?
Well, Pat Rabbit is a minister who's been sacked, and so I don't think he's any authority on what the people feel or want out there. His party are in pieces precisely because they have imposed a water tax on the very people they were supposed to represent. So I think the government need to listen to what the people are saying instead of constantly imposing unjust and unfair policies on them.
He also spoke about privatisation. Do you think, you know, insisting that Irish Water won't be privatised down the line, are you and other campaigners kind of scaremongering people into thinking that that is what's going to happen, when clearly there are no government plans to privatise the company?
Well, it's absolute nonsense. Irish Water is set up legally as a private entity. All the contractors and consultants who are milking Irish Water for taxpayers' money are private companies, and you only have to look across the water to Britain, where water services are privatised, and almost everywhere else in the world where charges have been introduced, privatisation has followed very shortly afterwards.
And he did concede, though, that the time frame for introducing water charges and setting up Irish Water, that there were problems with that. We should have really had a longer lead-in period as such. Do you think that's where the problems have stemmed from? Why people are so angry that they would have maybe accepted water charges if they had been brought in more gradually?
No, I think the problem is that water charges are a tax too far for people who've been battered with 6 years of austerity. But it is interesting that the government are backpedaling, talking about changing the timelines, admitting the whole thing is a fiasco, and that is a tribute to the unprecedented popular protest. It shows protests work, and now we need to continue those protests to force the abolition of these charges.
So, Emily, a new role for you with this commission, but it is a different commission now that it's merging both the Equality Authority and the Human Rights Commission.
That's right. People will be aware of the Equality Authority and the Human Rights Commission. Today's event is about bringing together both of those bodies into one much larger body that will now have a much more extensive remit to look at equality and human rights issues in Ireland.
In terms of reporting to the Minister for Justice previously, it is now going to be to the Oireachtas. How will that differ and change the body itself?
That's right. Up until now, both bodies have been reporting to the Minister for Justice. From tomorrow, when the legislation starts officially and will be in law, we will be reporting directly to the Oireachtas. As somebody who's worked as an independent officer for the last 10 years and accounts to the Oireachtas, it's very significant in terms of the credibility of your office, the credibility of the work, and also how seriously the politicians and the legislature take our work. So we'll be interacting with the Oireachtas committees on two levels. One, in terms of reporting on our annual report, and the second is financially. We have now got an accounting officer, our director, who will account directly to the Public Accounts Committee for the expenditure of the Commission.
And finally, as the Commissioner, what will your chief role and challenges be, I suppose, in the months ahead?
In terms of the immediate challenges, we're bringing together two bodies that existed already. So there are two different cultures, two groups of people. So we have to bring them together so that we're working as one. So there's some very basic work that needs to be done. The second is that we need to be accredited internationally as the national human rights institution. And that's very important, not just for our domestic, but for our international reputation on human rights. And the third is to set aside our strategy, to work on our strategy. And we'll be working internally and externally to try and set our priorities over the next few months.
And Des Cahill's here with the sports news.
Yeah, morning, Christopher. As usual, the weekend sport starts early. They've finished the second round of the BMW Masters Golf in Shanghai. The leader, Belgium's Nicolas Colsarts, he's 13 under par. Shane Lowry shot a brilliant 66. He's 8 under par, along with Graham McDowell there in 8th place. Michael Hoey has finished on 6 under and Paul McGinley on level par. Now, the remarkable run of injuries to hit the Irish rugby squad continued yesterday. It's dreadful luck for Joe Schmidt, particularly in the front row. And the latest two players to drop out of the squad for the Autumn Internationals are both props. Munster's James Cronin will be out for a minimum of 6 weeks because of an ankle injury he picked up playing against Saracens last weekend. And Nathan White also ruled out. The Connacht prop ruptured a tendon in his arm. He'll need surgery and will be out for about 16 weeks. In the Pro 12 League, both Leinster and Connacht are in action tonight. Leinster host Edinburgh at the RDS and Connacht travel to Wales to take on the Ospreys. Those games kick off at 7:35. In Gaelic games, Pat Flanagan has been confirmed as the new manager of the Offaly senior and under 21 football teams. He was previously managing in Sligo and Westmeath. He succeeds Emmett MacDonald. Brian Whelan will remain as Offaly hurling manager, and Donegal are to name their new football manager tonight. Their county committee meeting has been brought forward to this evening from Monday. Meanwhile, Premier Division Soccer could return to Galway tonight. They carry a 2-1 lead into the second leg of their promotion relegation playoff against UCD, and the game at DC Park starts at 7:45. Well, this weekend on the domestic front is dominated by the two FAI Cup finals. In the women's final, Raheny United take on UCD Waves. In the men's final, St Patrick's Athletic meet Derry City. So let's get a verdict on those. First of all, let's look at the women's final. And we're joined by the manager of the Irish senior team, Sue Ronan. Morning, Sue.
Morning, Des. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Good. Raheny United would be most people's hot favourites for this, would they?
Probably slight favourites, on the count that there are current league and indeed cup holders. They won a very exciting final last year against Castlebar Celtic after extra time. I think anyone that saw that game, you know, realised the level of women's football in the country. So it was a great game, and
yeah, it was a great spectacle.
Yeah, it was. But I think UCD would contest, you know, that they mightn't be in with a shout themselves. I think both teams are two of our strongest teams currently at the moment in the country. So I think there'll only be a goal in it, to be honest with you. It'll be very, very close, and it should be a good spectacle.
It's live on TV, isn't it?
It is, for sure, yes, which is fantastic, and it's an opportunity to showcase the women's game and, you know, for anyone that doesn't know much about it to have a look. But, you know, both teams are laden with international players, underage and senior international players, and, you know, some of the best talents in the country will be on display on Sunday, so I'd urge people to either have a look in or go along to the Aviva and watch.
Yeah, it's an early start, but as you say, well worth catching. It's
12:20 kickoff. Yes, yeah. Obviously, they need to allow a bit of time then for the men's match afterwards and warm-ups, etc. But, you know, it'll really be a good game. And as I said, I think a goal or an odd goal will be in it. And, you know, it'll be whoever takes the chances, maybe. But it should be very, very exciting.
Brilliant. OK, well, we look forward to it. And if it's half as good as last year's, as you say, Sue, it'll be well worth catching. That's Sue Ronan, the Irish senior manager. Raheny United taking on UCD Waves. In the men's final, St Patrick's Athletic meet Derry City. Now, the Bray Wanderers manager, Alan Matthews, joins us to give his verdict. Last week, Alan, you got it right when you went for Dundalk to beat Cork. What about this week?
Going for 100% record. I think Pats will get that monkey off their back, and I think they'll put 53 years of heartache in the FAI Cup behind them and win on Sunday.
Why do you fancy them?
I think they've got a really strong team, and I think the big pitch will suit the likes of Christy Fagg and Keith Fahey, Greg Bulger, Killian Brennan in those kind of central areas. I think if you look over the course of the season, They had second season syndrome in trying to retain the league. They just weren't at it over the course of the year. But I think on a one-off game like this, they just have enough, I think, to be able to deal with Derry City. They finished the season off quite strongly, albeit they lost at home to Athlone, but they finished off well up in Sligo. Derry have lost the last three games going into this match. And like everything else, I know form goes out the window, but it's not a good way, I think, to go into a cup final. Excuse me. And I just think that Pats have enough about them in all areas of the pitch to be that little bit stronger than Derry over the course of the 90 minutes.
All right, then. Well, we look forward to it. Alan Matthews, thanks a million for joining us. So that game live, of course, as well on RT Television and on Sunday Sport on Radio 1. Now, the Celtic winger, Alexander Tonev, has been handed a 7-match ban after being found guilty of using racist insults by the Scottish FA. It followed an incident involving the Aberdeen defender Shea Logan in a league game last month. Elsewhere, we have two race meetings today, Gavin, at Down Royal and Dundalk. Down Royal begins at 1:05 and Dundalk at 5:40.
Morning Ireland have found out that 44 companies have been banned from using the JobBridge internship scheme. JobBridge provides work experience placements for interns for a 6 or 9 month period. Its aim, it says, to assist in breaking the cycle where job seekers are unable to get a job without experience, either as new entrants to the labour market after education or training, or as unemployed workers wishing to learn new skills. Opposition politicians and trade unions have claimed widespread exploitation of interns taking part in the scheme. Meanwhile, the Department of Social Protection has confirmed that 330 JobBridge interns have been taken on by government departments since the scheme began. However, none of these were given full employment. Our reporter Aisling Kenny has the story. She's been investigating the scheme.
I'm going to run down to the shop.
Yeah, okay.
For your mood, it's feels very demeaning. You know, you try to be optimistic, but it can definitely get to you. Once you join JobBridge, you're pretty much locked into it because they will threaten to cut your dough if you decide to leave. So if you're unhappy in that situation, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. You feel kind of trapped in it.
26-year-old John O'Neill is one of the thousands of people who have taken part in the government's JobBridge internship scheme. After being unemployed for a year, he was eager to rejoin the workforce, and after months of job searching, he turned to JobBridge to gain experience. He started an internship in a furniture store with the promise of gaining interior design skills.
Well, it was advertised as an interior design / sales role. It was actually quite false advertisement because no one who was there is actually qualified as an interior designer to teach stuff about interior design. Basically, you're the first one the call for all the menial stuff. You know, I would have been asked to, like, you know, go get lunch for people, stuff like that.
There's a blue lead in the car.
52-year-old Mary O'Reilly has worked hard all her life and has gained valuable experience in different administration roles. When she found herself unemployed, she fell into a spiral of anxiety and was desperate to get back to work. In the absence of any jobs in her area, she took up a job bridge position with a large public sector organisation.
I am working in a real position. I'm working in a responsible position. I'm truly not an intern. I'm a hard worker, an experienced worker, and this organisation and other organisations are basically getting very good labour for free.
Mary says the arduous search for a job has taken its toll on her.
To be job searching at 53, it causes me great anxiety. I really do worry that I'll never find a job again. I've worked all the way since I was 18 years of age. I've always worked. I've always wanted to work. To be job searching for the last 16 months, answering adverts, in the main, they're all Jobbridge internships. The few jobs that haven't been Jobbridge internships, which I've applied for, I haven't had even the courtesy of a reply to.
From the beginning of the Jobbridge programme in 2011 to date, over 34,000 people have participated in the scheme. 6,000 received full-time employment with their host company, while nearly 3,800 were employed by other companies directly after their internship. In a statement, the Department of Social Protection confirmed that 330 Jobbridge interns have been hired by government departments. However, none of these interns was given a full-time job. Meanwhile, figures obtained by Morning Ireland show that 23,000 interns, which is over two-thirds of the total, have been employed in the private sector. Unite Trade Union's Regional Secretary Jimmy Kelly is critical of the Jobbridge programme and he says the scheme is wide open to exploitation.
Well, it would absolutely be amazing if employers weren't exploiting this for their own ends. And instead of advertising a job where you've got to pay the rate for the job that's established within that sector, you can access people on Jobbridge, use your argument to meet the criteria, and you have free labour. That's not the way to treat people.
Just trying to get this to work.
Although Jobbridge has been the subject of intense criticism since its introduction, many people like Stephen Kirwan have had positive experiences. Stephen secured a job as a business coach with Action Coach Business Coaching following his internship.
It was hugely beneficial to me in that I guess it matched the educational background that I had with the lack of work experience. So it gave me the practical work experience in something that I was interested in. I had the right attitude, I guess, which stood to me in the long run, and I was trained for the skill part. So they hired me based on my attitude and trained me for the skills. I had reached a point where I'd kind of run out of avenues. I was, I guess, like so many other people that go through a period of being unemployed for 5-6 months, you kind of go into a negative headspace. I feel it was probably one of my last hurrahs, I guess, in terms of an option. It was either that or probably move abroad.
Can I have a coffee, please?
Martin Malone, who is a photographer, was hoping to upskill when he took up a Jobbridge internship position with the Munster Express newspaper. However, the paper didn't have a photographer employed on a full-time basis, so Martin was left without a mentor.
And there's no training program in place. There's no supervision of any kind, either in or out. And quite a lot of the job involved working late in the evenings, early in the mornings, covering assignments, all off-site.
Martin, who says he was working 60-hour weeks, became increasingly frustrated when the paper began selling his photographs.
I was quite happy to, you know, to go and do the job, take the photographs and supply them to the organisation, knowing that I wasn't being paid for it, but I was would have been gaining an experience and you would have built up a portfolio. But when it came to the fact that this organisation were then selling those images on and offering them for sale, that was probably the final straw for me.
Following an investigation carried out by Jobbridge, the Munster Express was suspended from the programme for 2 months. The paper was also banned from hiring photographers under the scheme. Morning Ireland contacted the paper, which refused to comment on the case. However, the Department of Social Protection noted that the Munster Express had provided valuable work placement and development opportunities to interns in the past. In a statement to Morning Ireland, the Department of Social Protection confirmed that 44 companies have been banned from using the Jobbridge scheme. However, the department has refused to name the companies. Dublin West TD Paul Murphy is calling for the scheme to be reformed immediately.
The formal rules of the scheme would prevent the most serious cases of exploitation if they were applied. They're not applied.
there is not a rigorous inspection of the schemes. That's clear. It's clear that at most there's a kind of a cursory inspection of what goes on the website. But even much of what goes on the JobBridge website is against the formal scheme, the formal terms of the scheme. And so the scheme is absolutely rife for exploitation.
It was really, they said you had kicked
it. Meanwhile, interns like Martin are at risk of being taken advantage of by companies that are not adhering to the rules of the JobBridge scheme.
I didn't gain anything from it. The company that I was working for, I definitely would never go back near them again. I mean, for me, it was a waste of 3 months.
That was Martin Malone ending that report by Aisling Kenny. Joining us now in studio to discuss the scheme is the Minister of State at the Department of Social Protection, Kevin Humphreys. Thank you for coming into us this morning. Why in the main were 44 companies banned from being involved in the JobBridge scheme?
Well, first of all, I'd like to put the JobBridge into context. And if you look what's happened during this recession, as we went through, 330,000 people lost their jobs up to 2012. Quite a number of people came quite distant from the workplace. And JobBridge was introduced to allow people to get practical experience and a learning experience in JobBridge to get back into employment. Because all international research shows that if you're unemployed for more than 6 months, it's very difficult
To be fair, we did set out the aims of the scheme at the beginning.
Yeah, and just to kind of, there's 14,000 employers operating in the system. 0.3% that had participated are not allowed to advertise for JobBridge positions.
Why? 44 companies banned.
Yeah,
why?
And how that came about is that there is, it's up to this date, is there been 7,800 inspections by the Department of Social Protection. And we found in the cases of the 44 that they weren't giving a quality internship, there wasn't a good learning experience, and there wasn't a mentoring program in situ. So therefore, We do not allow those 44 companies to participate in JobBridge.
Why won't you name them?
Well, first of all, it's a voluntary. We're trying to encourage employers to be involved in JobBridge, and it's a voluntary commitment by employers to get involved in JobBridge. But also, we're precluded from doing that under the Freedom of Information.
Yes, but by not naming risk that there could be more exploitation because these companies...
Sorry, you asked me, and I'm answering very clearly, is first of all, and 2 points I'm making is, one, we want to encourage more people to participate, employers, to give young people opportunities to get work experience. And secondly, we're precluded to do that under Freedom of Information. So those are fact. But overall, and you've given three examples there in your clip, but you have to look at the 61% of people that participate in JobBridge go on to employment. It's a voluntary. People volunteer to go on JobBridge. People can leave JobBridge by giving a week's notice and leave. And also which shows up in your clip, any time that the DSP is notified, either by a job seeker, by another person in the company, it is investigated immediately and action is taken.
Okay, but what's to stop the 44 companies from taking on interns through schemes that aren't JobBridge if you don't name them? How are you going to protect those interns from being exploited again in the future?
We're precluded from doing that, as I said, but what we're trying to do is encourage people to actually participate through the JobBridge scheme. And there's an extra financial dividend for people that are participating through JobBridge in that. And overall, it's a well-monitored scheme. It's only 7% of our budget, of our activation budget, because there's a huge number of areas that we're encouraging people to get involved from, either from Job Plus all the way over to TUS and other schemes to get people back into the labour market. New jobs are being created. If you've been unemployed for over a year or 2 years, it's extremely difficult to get back into the labour market. These schemes are providing a very good quality work experience, allowing people to get back into the workforce. And if you look at the balance of that clip, is you get one person that had a good experience. But my experience of this is the vast majority of people that participate in JobBridge has a quality experience and move on to employment.
Yes, but your job is also to protect everybody who takes part in the scheme.
And that's why there's a rigorous 7,000 monitoring visit and you can, if you have a problem, automatically get onto the website and inform the department, and it will be investigated and action will be taken.
Do you acknowledge that some of the jobs advertised on the site clearly don't fall into the internship category? For example, sandwich artist at Subway.
Well, there's several areas in is if what you want to try and do is at this stage is we want a broad scale, broad area of experiences. It's not just for the IT sector, it's not just for accountancies and secretaries, it's for across all the levels of skills. So there would be an agreement there, if it is with Subway, I'm not particularly aware of the example you're giving me, there would be a mentoring system, there would be a learning, there would be food hygiene, there's a lot of training that has to go in before somebody is allowed to operate in a food preparation area, and that's well known throughout the catering industry. So if there's a quality learning experience, training and mentoring, it probably is a good scheme to be there.
Kevin Humphreys, Minister of State at the Department of Employment, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning.
And it's Halloween. We're joined by the Director of the National Burns Unit at St James's Hospital in Dublin, Mr Oran Shelley. You are a burn surgeon, a plastic surgeon. Can you give us a cautionary tale for tonight? What should you not be doing?
Well, I think we have a fascination with flame and bonfires here in Ireland from our Celtic roots. We all want to go out and enjoy ourselves this evening, but this puts ourselves at great risk. And so people who are out must be aware that clothes can catch fire, costumes can catch fire. People often wear clothes they're unfamiliar with. They don't know how to get out of them if they do catch fire. They're in an environment where they can't easily get first aid, cold water and so forth. People also use fireworks. They're holding explosives in their hand, which, if they go off, can have devastating consequences, losing hands and
as
fingers.
Of now, do you expect St James's, or indeed Crumlin, which is affiliated on the plastics, yes, and the burn side, do you expect to see children with amputated fingers or serious burns tomorrow morning?
I certainly hope we don't. But we certainly are prepared to...
Last year, did you?
We do every year have people who have lost parts of their fingers following holding fireworks in their hands, unfortunately.
So the message is, do not hold a firework.
Do not hold a firework in your hand at all, ever. Participate in supervised events by Dublin Council or your local council and enjoy yourself, but be safe.
The burn side of it, how deep can a bonfire burn go, and what can be the catastrophe for you as an individual?
Well, we categorise them 1 to 3 or 1 to 4, in fact. The burns can go all the way through and include muscle and down to bone. So they can be severe.
People just from a bonfire?
From a bonfire. It really depends on how long somebody remains alight for. So if somebody's clothes have caught fire and they're unable to get out of them, or in fact they don't realise that they're on fire, which sometimes happens, people can result can get devastating full thickness burn injuries. People can survive burn injuries now up to 90% of their total body surface area, but to do so requires months of surgery and rehabilitation and will result in permanent scarring and disfigurement.
We leave it there. Mr. Oran Shelley of the National Burns Unit, thank you very much for coming in to us this morning.